Thank you for listening to this sermon recorded at Holy Innocents Episcopal Church during one of our principal services. The sermon is based on the lectionary readings for this Sunday. To stay connected to Holy Innocents, friend us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, or check out our website. Thanks for listening, and stay connected.
Know about you, but I find this week's gospel like reading an encrypted computer message. In the short span of these verses, we get not one, not two, but five and a half parables. Yes, a half. Let's review. Number one, tiny mustard seed becomes the biggest bush. Number two, the yeast leavens all the bread, all the flour. Number three, there's a treasure in the field, and the field is worth buying. Number four, why don't you sell everything you have and go buy the pearl of great price? Number five, there's a trawler, and it has good and bad fish. And the half? The half is writers have a yard sale with the bad, and keep all the good stuff you find in the basement. Well, that's not a bad lesson for the first week after falling off the sermon bicycle for about a month. So let him who has ears hear. Hear what? I must admit to you that I find in today's world that I didn't need this particular gospel lesson. It's not what I ordered. With jets disappearing from the radar, with tensions in the Ukraine, with horrific and brutal scenes from Israel and Palestine, with the fact that North Korea is somehow fading from our sights, that there's continuing conflict in Africa, that women and children are still murdered and put down, not to mention that we have these problems called Iraq and Afghanistan and a Congress that won't talk to one another. Let she who has ears hear. But I didn't need a parable. For the kingdom of God to come near, I'd like a little clarity this morning. I don't need this poetic Jesus that sounds like a stream of consciousness, can't understand it, James Joyce or T.S. Eliot. I need some easy, good old American prose without metaphor, without simile. Just give me the facts. To which I can only imagine Jesus would look at me, smile, and tell another parable. You see, most of us have an intolerance for the moments in our lives in which we have no idea how to get from where we are to where we want to be. Let's repeat that. Most of us have an intolerance for the moments in life in which we have no idea how to get from where we are to where we want to be. It's almost like our mind, if not our soul, our being, is not satisfied with the tension between knowing and not knowing. Living between where we are and where we want to be takes effort and discipline, perseverance. And guess what? It's in that space between knowing and not knowing where creativity is born and where we find God. That's the space where Jesus hangs out with disciples. Now, if you're like me, we attempt to resolve the tension between where we are and where we'd like to be or want to be by inserting what I would call a bunch of bad spiritual habits. So we fill in the space too early because we don't like that space between, that vacuum. And so instead of seeking something new, we just throw in a simple concept, theory, or past experience to provide a good old Band-Aid, a technical fix to a situation that actually needs something we've never experienced before. It's almost like we're programmed not to wait long enough for God to act. So we, instead of jumping into prayer and patience and perseverance, we just go right ahead and charge on, right? We want to get where we're going. We already know. At least we think we do. So too often we miss the radical new thing that God is doing in our midst, the radical new birth, that resurrection that's going to take old things and make them new. A blogger this week, someone that I've been reading, Greg Kondra, put it this way. Nothing in this world will answer all your questions. Nothing in this world is going to solve all your problems or satisfy all your desires. These are impossible, immature ambitions. The spiritual life following this fellow named Jesus consists in realizing that these are impossible and immature practices. You see, our instinct is to get away from the tension. Jesus, he just stands around telling parables, preserving the tension. To learn how to appreciate Jesus and the parable, appreciate, not tolerate, appreciate, that's the life of a disciple. Because as disciples, we have to live between the kingdom that is breaking into the world and the kingdom we've got. We got to live in between. Truth be told, too many of us follow Jesus because we want a problem solver and a holy, sacred one at that. We want Jesus the fixer, Jesus the therapist, Jesus to take me away. But Jesus was not a problem solver. Problem solving takes things away, makes them go away. Jesus was creative. He lived in the tension because he knew that for something to be born, there had to be pain before the child came to the world. That new thing always brings pain before the child is born. And the kingdom of God breaking in, coming to us, is not about problem solving, but about turning our lives over to God and becoming co-creators, creatives with God. Now there's a fun little thing that happened this morning. We had a beautiful lesson, beautifully read from 1 Kings. You heard it. Solomon, young king, son of David, says, you know, God, I don't know how to go out and come in before this my people that you have given to me. And so therefore, God, I need you to give me wisdom. And God says, okay, because you didn't ask for the normal shopping list of most people in their prayer life, I'm going to do that. It's a good lesson. And it may be our leaders should read it. But here's the interesting thing. There's another lesson appointed today in the lectionary. We just chose not to read it. It's a lesson from Genesis. And it's a lesson about Jacob. You see, Jacob's out there in the wilderness hanging out with a fellow by the name of Laban. And Laban has two daughters, Rachel, whom Jacob loves, and Leah, who is also a nice woman. Jacob agrees to work for 7 years in exchange for the hand of Rachel. Talk about patience. Talk about living in the tension. And so he does. And at the end of 7 years, under the cover of night, Laban gives the bride to Jacob. They didn't have light bulbs. The fire was already out. And that night, Jacob married Leah. Laban tricked Jacob. Now, justice would have said Jacob could take Laban's life in the morning. But instead, Laban says to his son-in-law, "Work 7 more years, and you may have the hand of your beloved." Now, we probably didn't read that lesson because you already see that that's a very interesting lesson to have to unpack, right? Presents a few problems for us. But here's the thing. Jacob did not slay Laban. Jacob stayed and lived in the tension, in the parable, in the story. He didn't seek a quick fix, a technical fix that would have demanded justice in the moment because it was easy and because Laban had swindled him. No, somehow he knew that death, no life, no angels, no ruler, no things present or to come, nothing was going to separate him from the love of God. And so what did he do? Jacob hung out there and he waited and worked 7 more years. And at the end of 7 more years, there were 2 women in his life. And guess what? God did a new thing. And they bore 12 children who became the 12 tribes of Israel. And God looked at Jacob and said, "I will rename you. You will not be Jacob. You will be Israel." Which means to struggle with God. With God? Not apart from, but with? You see, the whole story, the whole parable that we've been given is that God is with us in that place of tension. God is with us where we are and where we're going. When we make the mistake of putting our desire in God's desire, then we lose the story. We forget the parable. We don't hear God as poet. We become only creator, not co-creator with God. God does not need a bunch of literalists who only want a technical fix, a simple black and white answer to a situation or situations that require new, creative, resurrected life. We are the holy innocents. We are standing in a good place. But we have yet to dream bold enough about the kingdom of God, the kingdom of heaven, what could be. We have yet to protect all God's children, our very name, the holy innocents. And God is calling us to new ways, to bring new life and new hope. Let us never be known as a people who had a building problem and applied a technical fix called a capital campaign. Let us never be known merely as people who established a good school that became the largest parish-based Episcopal school in the United States. Let us never be just a group who enjoys one another's company. Let us be people of parables, people of poetry, people that co-create with God. Let us be the holy innocents. I've never done this in all of my priesthood, but today, in the context of a sermon, I'm going to ask our outreach committee, our outreach team, and our vestry to articulate 3 outreach goals by the end of this year that will be more bold, more proclaiming, more hopeful of the God's kingdom breaking into the world than anything we have ever done before. Just 3. we must live in the poetic. We must live in the metaphor. For my brothers and sisters, we are called to be in the tension of where we are and where God calls us to be, a place in our prayers that is too deep for words. Oh, dear people of Holy Innocent, we can plant seeds that will grow into the largest of trees. We can mix dough that will become the bread of life. We can find treasures in fields that lie fallow. We can find pearls for all God's children. We can fish all over creation. And we can find a half parable strong enough to change the world. 5.5 parables. It's all good news.